Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a warm welcome to Friday's Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany.
And I am Abubakar Jallo with what's trending on social media and on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Also on our programme, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon joins activists and campaigners marking the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women.
Violence against women and girls is a global pandemic that destroys lives, fractures communities, and holds back development.
And why 40,000 Nigerians are seeking redress against the oil giant Shell in a court in London rather than in Nigeria.
They can't get this cleaned up through the Nigerian system. The only option is to sue Shell, the parent company, in London.
And our video on South Africa's former public protector, Tulima Dotsela, is still getting much attention. We will bring you some of those responses on that story.
But first, we take a look at what's been happening around the globe.
I'm Crispin Mwakideo with DW News. South African President Jacob Zuma will challenge the so-called state capture report in court. The report released this month alleges that Zuma allowed the wealthy Gupta businessmen to have undue influence in his government. Zuma and the Guptas deny any wrongdoing. Around 20 vintage airplane pilots have been released after being detained for 2 days by Ethiopian authorities. Ethiopian officials had earlier claimed that the pilots had illegally entered the country's airspace on Tuesday. The Vintage Air Rally bills itself as a flying rally across Africa from the Greek island of Crete to Cape Town for planes built in the early 20th century. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called on nations to tackle violence against women. November 25th is the International Day of the Elimination of Violence Against Women. Hundreds of thousands of women, particularly in conflict regions, face the threat of violence on a daily basis, and according to the UN chief, for the world to become a better society, there is need to empower women and girls.
Violence against women and girls does not emerge from nowhere. It's simply the most extreme example of the political, financial, social and economic oppression of women and girls worldwide. Ending this violence is central to our efforts to empower women and girls and to build stronger, fairer, and more inclusive and stable societies.
To Turkey now, where President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has warned the European Union that he will open the border gates and allow hundreds of thousands of migrants to reach the EU. The European Union struck a deal earlier this year to return migrants to Turkey in return for a package which includes aid for the refugees and accelerated EU membership talks. A furious Erdogan was reacting after the European Parliament voted to freeze membership negotiations with Turkey over the government's heavy-handed crackdown following a failed coup in July.
When 50,000 migrants amassed at Kapıkule, border gate, you caused an uproar. You began asking what would you do if Turkey opens its gates. Look at me. If you go any further, these gates will be opened. Neither me nor my people will be affected by these empty threats. You should know that.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Some 20 children have frozen to death in the northern Afghan province of Yozyan, an official said on Friday. Temperatures plunged below 0 degrees Celsius this week and 40 centimetres of snow fell in the area. The unrest in various parts of Afghanistan forced nearly 500,000 Afghans to leave their villages in 2016. And finally, in sports, Formula One Mercedes driver Lewis Hamilton was fastest in practice in Abu Dhabi ahead of teammate Nico Rosberg. The two drivers head into Sunday's final race of the season, where the winner will be crowned champion. And in the UK, the world of football has been shocked by revelations of ex-footballers that they had been sexually abused by their coaches. For more news and information, visit dw.com. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
Today, Friday, is the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. The World Health Organization estimates that 1 in 3 women worldwide have experienced physical and/or sexual violence in their lifetime. Among those calling for action to stop this is UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon.
Violence against women and girls is a global pandemic that destroys lives, fractures communities, and holds back development. It is not confined to any region, a political system, culture, or social class. It is present at every level of every society in the world. It happens in peacetime and becomes worse during conflict.
The UN Secretary General also emphasized that violence against women and girls did not exist in isolation. It was part of a broader problem.
Violence against women and girls does not emerge from nowhere. It's simply the most extreme example of the political, financial, social, and economic oppression of women and girls worldwide. Ending this violence is central to our efforts to empower women and girls and to build stronger, fairer, and more inclusive and stable societies.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Nigeria, with some 184 million inhabitants, is Africa's most populous country. How much of a problem is physical and sexual violence for the women who live there? I put that question to Soudatou Madi, Secretary General of RAPA, which stands for Women's Rights Advancement and Protection Alternative, and whose mission is social justice for women.
It's a serious problem because we have it in the homes where, you know, we have spousal battery. We have also vulnerabilities of children being exploited, either by parents, by foster parents, or even other caregivers. We have it in schools where we have sexual harassment. We also have it in public spaces such as offices where women go through every kind of harassment, you know, for entry, progression, and even keeping the job.
Is the government of President Muhammadu Buhari showing greater awareness of the problem than previous administrations?
There is some level of efforts at addressing specific issues. Also, in terms of the police, which is the statutory body for investigation when violence happens, and therefore responsibility for keeping law and order, there are significant strides.
What measures are the most effective when countering this problem? How important, for example, is education?
Yes, education for the girl child is the first measure that reduces her vulnerability to violence. She understands her circumstances. She also can take preventive action. She is also able to have marriage made where she is discerning and she can take decisions that affect her life. We need to government to commit resources to keep sensitization alive and to hold people accountable. Courts should be financed to have the requisite technology and training to understand the psyche of girls. Government should also, the next measure is to ensure that the laws that are holding.
Soudatou Madi, Secretary General of the Nigerian Women's Rights Organization, RAPA.
And Mark, while that is a really important day, not much has actually been discussed on various social media platforms.
Could it be perhaps that activists don't find the topic suitable for social media debates?
It could be, but many people are actually engaged on the topic, but on different platforms, different websites, not just on social media.
We'd stay with social commitment. The Right Livelihood Award, often referred to as the Alternative Nobel Prize, is being awarded in Stockholm, Sweden today. It honours commitment in fields such as human rights, environmental protection or education, and is usually shared between four laureates. This year, the Right Livelihood Award goes to an Egyptian feminist, a Turkish newspaper, a Russian human rights activist, and a Syrian civil defence group. Malta Rovi-Kalman has more.
Men covered in dust are digging through the rubble, looking for survivors after a bomb attack. They rescue two young girls from a destroyed building. What's disturbing to watch, even on video, is routine for members of the Syrian civil defense. The White Helmets, as they're called, have saved tens of thousands of lives in Syria's ongoing civil war, often risking their own. They continue their work even under difficult circumstances, as the head, Raid Al-Saleh, explains.
The problem we are facing is that all our centers in Aleppo have been bombed. We are now working with materials we had put aside as a backup, materials that we were able to retrieve from the rubble and with equipment that was not destroyed.
The commitment and the persistence have now won the White Helmets a Right Livelihood Award. They share it with Mozen Hassan, a feminist from Egypt, who is fighting for women's rights in the Arab world. Through her foundation Nasra, she helps victims of sexual violence and petitions for legislative changes. Another laureate is Svetlana Ganushkina, who has been supporting migrants and refugees in Russia for 26 years. Her organization, Civic Assistance Committee, offers them legal advice, humanitarian help and education.
People are different. Some people treat them well, and why shouldn't they? But I don't understand that there are people who are obsessed with xenophobia. But the only weapon against xenophobia is contact and communication.
This year's final award winner is Cumhuriyet, an oppositional newspaper in Turkey, which, according to the jury, reports independently and critically, despite censorship, death threats and oppression. 10 of its journalists are currently held on terrorism charges. Its editor-in-chief fled to Germany to escape a prison sentence. All laureates share a prize of €200,000 for the award, which will be handed over at a ceremony starting at 6 p.m. UTC.
Malte Rove-Kalman, next to the UK, where the Anglo-Dutch oil giant Shell has urged a High Court judge to block pollution claims brought against it by more than 40,000 Nigerians. Shell is arguing that the cases are fundamentally Nigerian issues and shouldn't be heard in Britain. The Nigerians, who say their lives have been blighted by oil pollution, are represented by the law firm Lee Day. And DW's Emma Wallace asked one of their partners, Daniel Leader, why they were taking legal action in the UK rather than in Nigeria.
They can't get this cleaned up through the Nigerian system. The only option is to sue Shell, the parent company, in London for failing to make sure their Nigerian operations operate lawfully and do not pollute people's livelihoods. So this is a very important preliminary stage of the litigation because we are arguing about where the case should be heard. Shell is arguing very strongly that this has got nothing to do with the parent company, that the problem is fundamentally the Nigerian company, and that this case should proceed in Nigeria. And we're saying it's got everything to do with the parent company. They are ultimately responsible for what goes on in Nigeria, and they control things very closely. And secondly, going to a Nigerian court is an absolutely hopeless prospect. They're not going to get anywhere.
And Shell have been saying that some of these problems of pollution have been caused by people stealing the oil and attacking the pipelines. Is that at all true?
Absolutely. Some of it has been caused by that, and some of it has been caused by the very poorly maintained pipeline infrastructure. They blame everything on third-party theft. The truth is it's actually a very mixed picture of failure to maintain their pipelines and third-party theft. But the deeper point about for third-party theft is that they should be making sure these pipelines are protected. They do not have adequate protective measures, and they cannot remotely shut down these pipelines. So when they are tapped into, the spills are devastating. And we say that's an absolute failure because innocent people are being impacted by these criminal activities. Shell has an enhanced duty to make sure that other people are not impacted by this criminal activity. And yet they haven't acted. So we're saying either way, they are responsible for the damage that has been caused to these very poor rural Nigerians who are barely keeping their head above water and whose livelihoods are being destroyed by this pollution.
Daniel Leader, Abu.
And let's get a reaction out of Tuli Madonsela, who won Germany's Africa Prize on Thursday. Michael B. Sommer said, politicians never change things. Stop being naive, using her work as a campaign strategy.
You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. Coming up here on Africa Link, campaigning for the elimination of violence against women.
My take is that we need to start shifting the focus from who it happens to who did it. That is it. End of story.
And more on that story a little later. In the Democratic Republic of Congo this week, around a dozen opposition groups launched a fresh campaign urging President Joseph Kabila to quit when his mandate expires on December the 20th. The Bye Bye Kabila movement wants him to step down unconditionally and rule himself out from staying in power. 10 years have elapsed since the DR Congo held its first free elections, and this November was to have been the month for fresh elections for a new president. They have been postponed. Here's Olly Tangen Jr.
A few weeks ago at a conference in Berlin, hosted by the Konrad Adenauer Foundation and the Ecumenical Network of Central Africa, Prince Kaumba Lofunda, who heads the DR Congo Interior Ministry, said that President Joseph Kabila's government had done much in building democracy in his country.
The judiciary has not been carrying out its work correctly. The majority of the president's supporters have not respected the constitution and have not organized any elections. Then we ask ourselves if we are moving in the right direction.
But critics of his government reject Lafunda's analysis. Many are concerned that the elections, originally planned for November, have been postponed indefinitely, and that President Kabila will still be in power after his term ends in December. For Bärbel Kofler, Germany's Federal Human Rights Commissioner, the political turmoil is a major step backwards.
We follow the 2006 elections with great hope. This is why we are deeply concerned about the president's intention not to surrender his office after his second term.
Officially, the elections were postponed due to logistical problems. The government said that the voting registry needed to be reworked. This would require a census. But a census can no longer be held. Jean-Claude Katende, a Congolese human rights activist, has a mixed assessment of the last 10 years. He thinks that there have been positive developments, for example, the new constitution of 2006, as well as the elections in 2006 and 2011. But the situation has not improved in terms of human rights.
I assure you that our country has done so much. Parliament has passed 250 laws over the past 10 years. That is 25 laws a year. Which parliament in the world can work at such a speed?
This was particularly evident in September, when the police brutally suppressed demonstrations against President Kabila. An estimated 50 people were killed. The next few months are going to be critical in showing whether or not the DR Congo is on the road to democracy and whether or not human rights in the country will improve.
Olly Tangen Jr. reporting.
Blog Report.
Abu, it's your turn. Please tell us what's in this week's blog report.
Well, today, as you may have heard in the show earlier, it's the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. It's a date set aside by the United Nations to not just commemorate it, but also discuss the difficulties women go through on their everyday lives. And for that, I spoke to Lindsay Kukunda, who is a Ugandan, but also a very strong woman and run a blog that's called Not Your Body. In this interview, Lindsay tells me the media in Uganda are using this particular day to attack her because of the controversial issues she is blogging about. Take a listen.
I want people to connect. I want people who are reading to connect and say, that could be me telling this story right now. Or that happened to me and I didn't think that was a big deal.
I've been reading the stories on your blog, and there's one story where you talked about where you nearly got raped. Can you maybe summarize that a little bit for me and your everyday experience?
So I was at a house party, and I got a bit too drunk. My friend, Peter, handed me over to his friend, Bob. I didn't use real names, so I might have mixed them up a bit. But my friend handed me over to his friend, who he trusted, and he said, please take Lindsay to my room. and make sure she's safe and sound. So Bob takes me to Peter's room, where he proceeds to take off my underwear and start doing all sorts of things that he should not do, which was really traumatizing. And I kept telling him, I don't want this, can you please stop? I don't want this. He had locked us in the room, he had turned the key. And then Peter came back in and banged on the door and said, what's going on? And Bob jumped off, he put my underwear back on for me, what a polite guy. And he opened the door and Bob dragged him outside and they had a bit of an altercation. But then in the end, my friend came back in with the keys to the room and said, Lindsay, I have the keys to the room. No one else is going to enter. I want you to know that you're safe. This is not going to happen to you. I just under my watch. So that was my story that I shared, one of many.
This sounds like an issue that affects every young girl in Africa on a daily basis. But mostly people say it's because of the dress code or it's because the way they put themselves out there. How does this affect you? What's your take on this issue, on this particular argument?
My take is that we need to start shifting the focus from who it happens to who did it. That is it. End of story. I want no more discussion. Was I drunk? Was my skirt short? Was I in the right place? No. The criminal is the bad person. And the victim is the person who has to spend their whole life knowing that the criminal is out there.
These are obviously very, very hard issues or topics to talk about on social media and in African societies. Have you been attacked on your discussion forums on Facebook and on your blog?
Yes. Yes, I have been attacked. The Ugandan media has written a story abusing me. That's what they have chosen to do this day. Abusing me because I was attacking a lady who was shaming another lady for reporting sexual harassment. I am not going to respond to it because if I respond to it, then they shall print that response and will just continue and continue and continue.
Okay, if you choose not to respond to this particular publication on you, how do you change the discourse?
I don't want to change the perception. What I want to do is bring in a new discussion, try to get some of these media houses to publish stories by me. I also want to set up a website where I and other people write opinion pieces, we write stories where we get news sources that are positive, that don't denigrate women. That is what I want to do. But I also want, in the future, I want Nochobodi to set up a media house. It's just going to show how it's done right. Because right now, no media house is doing it right. It's ridiculous.
That was Lindsay Kukunda, a Ugandan blogger, talking to me earlier on this International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. We apologize for the quality of that Skype line. You can find a longer version of that interview on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Mark.
Sport now. Listeners to DW's Kiswahili service can hear live coverage of the Bundesliga match between Eintracht Frankfurt and Borussia Dortmund on Saturday. Kickoff is at 3:30 p.m. local time. That's 14:30 UTC. Now, when Joseph Acharo from our Kiswahili service joined me in the studio, I suggested to him that Eintracht Frankfurt have been doing much better than expected this season. So, what sort of a game was this likely to be against the heavyweights Borussia Dortmund?
It is expected to be a very tough game, I think, for Frankfurt, who are now position number 7 in the table standing, and Borussia Dortmund being at third place with 21 points. Frankfurt will want to add some more points and take away 3 points from Borussia Dortmund so that they move up. But we also should not forget that Borussia Dortmund has just come out of the European games with a very, very wonderful win against Legia, where they put a new record, 8-4, with the return of Marco Reus. Marco Reus scoring 3 goals, a hat-trick in that game. So Dortmund is coming in as a very strong side compared to Frankfurt. But remember also, Frankfurt will be playing at home, so they will not want to disappoint their fans. So it's really going to be fireworks at the Commerzbank Arena in Frankfurt.
But Frankfurt's trainer Niko Kovac is being very modest. He said on Friday, "We're not a top team." What do you read into this?
I think that's more of a psychological gameplay. He's trying to prepare the psychology of his players not to underrate or underestimate Borussia Dortmund. But we know that the game can go either way. Sometimes the best team does not win. We know that Dortmund is very strong, but there could be a surprise at Frankfurt. So for the coach to say that, I think he's just trying to be very careful and warning his players and showing respect also to their opponents who are coming all the way from Dortmund to Frankfurt, that they are going to prepare themselves properly for their opponent and they are not taking any chances.
And that was Joseph Acharo from DW's Kiswahili service. Abu.
And to what's trending on Twitter today, we have hashtag Raila Bill. That's trending in Kenya. Here, users are talking about a proposal by the opposition leader Raila Odinga on how to fight corruption. Jane Wyatt wrote, "By the way, I totally support the Raila bill." Kamba Pundit said, "Our dorky legislators are waiting for that bill in parliament so that they can rape it to grave. The bill is logical to the Jubilee government. Evans attempted to make some fun by writing, the only difference between Raila Odinga and King Solomon is the number of wives only. This guy is wise." And Ben said, "MPs will balance between political mileage and benefit of the bill. I think the former will carry the day." Hashtag COSATU is also trending in South Africa. South Africa's biggest trade union, COSATU, has said it will back Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa to succeed and battle President Jacob Zuma. Now, Zuma is expected to leave office in December 2017 after his second five-year mandate expires. This user wrote, "When Jacob Zuma heard that COSATU had endorsed Cyril Ramaphosa to succeed him, he was like, doom." Kathy Mwangi said, "So COSATU endorses Ramaphosa as next ANC president, the same man who proposed a 3,500 rand minimum wage and also orchestrated the Marikana massacre? Wow." Another user, Emperor, said, "Ramaphosa will kill black businesses and he will kill South Africa. You can't trust a capitalist who massacres black business." And also, back to our Facebook, our new Facebook page has just hit the 50,000 mark. And that's right, we have 50,000 people who are currently following us on Facebook. Thanks to everyone for your wonderful contribution and for engaging us on a daily basis. Thanks for building a very strong Facebook community.
Abu, many thanks. And we've got some news coming in from South Africa. International credit rating firm Fitch dropped its outlook for South Africa from stable to negative on Friday, citing the country's recent political turmoil under President Jacob Zuma. Now, Zuma has been engulfed by graft scandals and a power struggle with Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan, while growth in the country has fallen to 0.5% and unemployment hit a 13-year high. Political risks to standards of governance and policy making have increased, Fitch said in a statement, confirming that it kept South Africa's credit rating at one notch above junk status. Now, Moody's is expected to issue its updated grading later on Friday before Standard & Poor's makes its key announcement on December the 2nd. Our main stories here on Africa Link before we leave you. On International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, we've been hearing about the plight of women in Nigeria. We've also been finding out about the Right Livelihoods Award and the political crisis in the DR Congo. Remember, there is more news and information on DW.com. This programme will be back again on Monday. From me and Abu, goodbye.
And for me as well, have a good day.